We're holding on mem bays, amud bays, 8 lines from the bottom. We've been discussing a machlokas of the Shimon and the Chachamim, which started out with that in our Mishnah, the Chachamim had drawn a distinction when the girl herself gets the money for her knas and the various other payments that go along with it versus when her father gets it. And the Mishnah had drawn the distinction that the key factor is whether omda badin, whether the judgment had been given, the verdict had been given, while she was still a naira and her father was alive, versus after her father passed away or after she became a begetz. And then in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon had said that it's not a matter of when the verdict was given, it's a matter of when the actual money was collected. If the actual money had been collected while her father was alive and while she was a naira, then it goes to him, and then eventually it gets bequeathed to his children, like the rest of his estate. Otherwise, if it wasn't collected before the father died, or before she became a begeres, then she keeps it herself. So we got into a discussion about the relationship of that to what Reb Shimon holds about Korban Shavuah, where Reb Shimon says that if one person is claiming from the other something of a knas, and the other one swears falsely about it, then Reb Shimon brings from a pasuk that he would be potter from the special korban, from the Asham gzelus that he would normally bring about that. So we were discussing is there maybe a difference in that regard between the knas of a girl of the onus of a fata versus other kinds of knasis, and we brought a pasuk that indicates that yes. The last thing we said was, though, that even so, we have a special pasuk for that, but nevertheless, you also have the case where, let's say, she did become a begeres, and therefore should have been entitled to the money, but then she died before it was actually collected, where then Reb Shimon is going to say that her father yarshins it from her. So the Gemara continues on that topic, Eisvei. So this whole discussion. So the last part was that we had a discussion between Reb Nachman by Yitzchak and Rava on this point. So Reb Nachman by Yitzchak asks Rava, we have a contradiction. In the Braisa that we quoted yesterday, Reb Shimon says that a person is potter when he's denying this claim of a knas, she'ena mashalem knas al piyatzma, because Reb Shimon is saying, because you don't pay a knas based on your own admission, so therefore it can't really be considered mamon yet. Implying time of delay amud badin, so that seems to be implying that only because it hasn't yet become mamon, because only when edim come, or is he going to be chayav to pay? If he were to admit the claim before that, then he'd be potter, because moed b'knas potter. Ha'omad b'din, implying that if it was already where the other guy is claiming, which was the original question that we started the sugya with on Amud Aleph, where the other guy is telling him, it's not just a matter of that you owed me the knas, we actually went to Beis Din, and Beis Din decided against you, and they decided that you have to pay, so new, pay up. And the other guy denies it, and then later on swears falsely. So then later on we're saying that there's a korban shavuah. So the implication is ha'amad badin. So if there had been the gemar din, if they had actually had the verdict, and now the other guy is claiming the money, the mishalem apiatzmai. We're there in such a scenario. If he were to go in another place and admit that in fact he owes that, so you had the case. Let's say, for example, so Shimon owes Reuven a knas for whatever reason. It could be the knas we're talking about as far as onus and mafata, or any of the various other knases that we talked about yesterday. Now, they went to Beis Din. Beis Din decided that in fact he is liable to pay. Later on, now if Reuven were to go over to Shimon and say, "No, the Beis Din decided it. Where's my money?" If at that point Shimon were to admit, "You're right. You know, I haven't paid you yet." We would be mechayivim to pay. Where there's no edim and moed b'knas potter. Here it's not moed b'knas anymore. It was already he's telling him there was already a verdict and you owe me on those grounds. So in that case the implication seems to be korban shvur nami mechayiv. Then Reb Shimon should be mechayiv him to pay to bring a korban shvur, because in that case it's turned from knas into mammon. So now, earlier in the sugya, we talked about that according to Reb Shimon, we would say that again, until he actually gets the money, it's not considered mamon. But Rabbah had said that generally speaking, when it comes to other kinds of knosis, once omad badin, then that's already enough for it to be considered mamon. And in the case of onus and mafata, you have where in addition she also became a begeres and then passed away. So then, in that case, Reb Shimon would distinguish between what he's chayav to pay, that we would say at that point, if he says I owe it, he would have to pay. But you're still telling me, Rabba, that Reb Shimon would pater him from a korban shavua. Why? Isn't it at that point full-fledged mamon? So that's the question. Korban shavua nami l'chayev. He should be chayev for a korban shavua as well, the same way as he's chayev to pay. And the answer is Reb Shimon l'divrem d'rabbanan. The answer is that part is not Reb Shimon saying his own opinion. He's saying what he thinks the chachamim ought to say. He says, Lididi, as far as I'm concerned, afagav to omad badin, even though there was already omad badin, and the other guy is saying, you owe me the money as a result of that, rachmana patrim, v'chichish. I say that since the pasuk says v'chichish v'amisai, and lists a whole bunch of things that never were knas in the first place, then therefore, even now, where it's turned from knas into mamon, because we're talking about after omad badin, nevertheless, I would still say that it's zeris hakosiv, that he's potter from the korban. But he says, according to you, Chachamim, who don't hold of that drasha, shouldn't you at least be agreeing with me where he had not yet been Omad Badin, where he's saying, you owe me that knas, where after all, what he's claiming is a knas, and it still is a knas at that point, and it would even be Umoydim knas potter, and at that point, if Shimon were to say, I agree, I do owe it, then he'd be potter. So that being the case then, so even if he denies it, it can't be said that he denied a claim of mamon that he should have to pay. So he's saying to the Chachamim, forget about the drasha from Vechichesh. Why in that case, where it's still knas, why are you telling me that he'd be chayiv korban shavua? In the case of the onus and the fata. So why are you saying in the Mishnah that it's, in our Mishnah we're talking about Omdav Adin as far as who the money goes to, but in the Braisa that we quoted yesterday, we said that the Chachamim are saying that how do you know that you bring a korban shavua even for a claim of knas, and they learn from a different pasuk Mal Amal, and we said that that's talking about Loy Omad Badin, it's talking about even before the case was brought to Beis Din and decided. So why, Reb Shimon is saying to the Chachamim, at that point it's surely knas, and if he were to be murdered at that point, he'd be potter. Why are you saying he's chayav for a korban shavua? And the answer is, Rabbanan Savri, the answer is because the Chachamim hold the case of onus and mefata is special, ki kotova boshes of gam kotova. Because fundamentally, when the father is making the claim, at that point, he's not so much fundamentally claiming the knas, he's claiming the boshes and the pgam. And the boshes and the pgam are not knas, those are mamon, because those are to make up for a loss, for a physical or a psychological or whatever, or social loss that she suffered. So therefore the Chachamim say, well, then that's like any other claim of mamon, and you would bring a korban shavua for that. Okay, well, I mean, Reb Shimon knows also that there's boshes of gam, the maya komitzi. In that case, what's the underlying machlokes? And the answer is, Amar Papa, Reb Shimon sava, it's like it's, Reb Shimon takes the view, lo shavish inish midi de kits, the tova midi de loy kits. You have to consider it like this. If he's claiming knas as well as boshes and gam, what's the logic to say that he, okay, granted, maybe we're not saying that he's claiming all of it together. The Ritva explains on that he might figure if I try to claim it all together, then the guy is more likely to try to evade it because he can't afford to pay out that much money at once. So, okay, therefore I'll do only one thing at a time. But Reb Shimon is going to figure like this. If the father is going to go over to the onus or the mafata and demand from him the payment, what's more likely that he's going to demand from him the 50 shgalim, which It's an actual fixed amount of money. We know that we said in the previous pedic that whether no matter how high or low her social status or her looks or whatever, 50 sloim is always 50 sloim. So therefore, so logically, then he's going to be demanding that, which is something where he knows that that can be available on the spot. So loy shavik inish midi dekits. So if Shimon figures, then a person is not going to ignore something which is a fixed amount, but tova midi deloy kits, and claim something else which is not a fixed amount, which is going to vary depending on the circumstances. Therefore, if Shimon says when he's making the claim, fundamentally he's going to be claiming the knas. Later on, yeah, he'll separately claim the boshes and pagam, but right now he's interested in the knas. Well, moed of a knas potter, and therefore, if the other guy were to admit it, then he would be potter altogether. Therefore, Rav Shimon is saying that not only at that time, but even after Gmar Din, even after the verdict has been given, that he owes that money, even then he's potter from a korban for the shvur. Rabbanan sabi, whereas the Chachamim say, on the other hand, don't consider the fact that one's a fixed amount and the other is variable. Rabbanan sabi, lo shavik inish midi deki moidi be lo nifter, but tava midi deki moidi be nifter. Think about it, say the Chachamim. If Reuven says to Shimon, you owe the knas, and Shimon says, you know what, you're right, I do owe it, he'd be potter altogether. So why would the father even bother? Instead, it makes more sense that the father is first going to be claiming the boshes and pagam, which are not a knas, those are mammon. If Shimon admits to them, he's actually going to have to pay them out. So therefore, the Chachamim say it makes more sense that that would be what he's trying to claim first. And therefore the usual rules of korban shvur would apply to it. There was an interesting lomdish explanation on this by Rav Naftali Trup, who was a great Rosh Hashiva about 90 years ago. He was the Rosh Hashiva of the Chofetz Chaim's Yeshiva in Radin. Anyway, he explains, basically, that it's true, of course, that you have knas versus you have boshes and pagam, but basically he says a little bit different than the Ritva we were saying, that you're maybe only collecting one versus the other. He says not necessarily. Maybe you could say you are trying to collect all of them, but when you're demanding the knas, even the boshes and pagam at that point get transformed into a knas because they're sort of auxiliary to the knas itself. And therefore, Rav Shimon is saying, therefore, they will follow the same rules as knas. Whereas the Chachamim are saying, given that point, if you make them all knas, then it means the guy can more easily evade paying them because he can just say that I'm potter. He can admit that he's chayev, and then in fact he becomes potter from the knas. Therefore, the Chachamim are saying it's more logical that he's going to be only claiming the boshes and pagam by themselves in order that they will remain in the status of mamon. And once he's doing that, then they also remain in the status of mamon insofar as the korban shavuot. Okay, so that's the end of that sugya. And so we've established, therefore, that Rav Shimon and the Chachamim are arguing on several different factors. They're arguing on Mishnah, at what point does the money belong to the girl herself as opposed to her father? Is it after Omad Badin, or is it only after the money has actually been paid out? And they're arguing over a couple of different aspects within the Korban Shavua over here. Before Omad Badin, as we just said, whether the father is fundamentally claiming the knas only or the boshes and pagam primarily, and then also even after Omad Badin, Reb Shimon is saying that even though at that point it turns into mammon, but since it started out as knas and it still retains the din of knas as far as korban shavua, and the Chachamim are disagreeing with that. So they're arguing essentially, we're saying on three different points. Okay. So now we're going to go over, now we're going to go over to a new topic. We said in the Mishnah, continuing on this matter of, we said that the knas and so forth go to the girl's father if she's still a naira and if he's still alive. And then we went on to say that in that case, then not only is it the father's, but if the father then dies, then it goes to the brothers because they yarshin it from him just like they yarshin the rest of his mom. And then the Mishnah had gone on to say that as far as after her, that if her father passes away, then maisi adero mitziosa, any earnings that she makes and anything that she finds, even if she hadn't collected it yet, then it also, when the father passes away, if she did this work or found this metziah during her father's lifetime, then it still goes to the brothers. In other words, so if she had, for example, she had a job, whereas we're going to learn later on in the parent, the money from her maisiyah deha, the money from her job, goes to her father as long as she's a katana or a naira. So now if she did that job, but she hadn't yet gotten her paycheck, and then the father passes away, then it's part of the estate and it goes to the brothers, just like everything else from the estate. So now we're going to talk about a point. Now, Rashi had pointed out on the Mishnah that unlike the earlier part of the Mishnah, which was talking about knas, here we're talking about mama. And after all, if her employer, if she were to go and take her employer to Beis Din and say, "No, I'm supposed to be paid such and such. Where is it?" And the guy admits, "You know, I haven't paid you yet." Unlike in the case of knas, he would actually have to pay it. Therefore, it is considered mamon from the get-go, and therefore, the usual rules apply that the father can bequeath it to his children. So now the Gemara is going to take up that point and discuss a related issue, which is where our Mishnah is going to come into it. So it starts out, Bomine Rav Avina Merav Sheshes. Rav Avina asks Rav Sheshes as follows, Bas Hani Zonas Mina Achim, when the daughter is being supported by her brother. Now, the father supports his daughter as long as he's alive. When he passes away, Namidaraisa, nothing. At that point she's on her own, because her father has passed away, so therefore she's now on her own. Midrabanan, as we're gonna learn later on in the parak, one of the conditions that comes attached to the ksuba is that after the father dies, then the brothers who yaushin the estate are going to, not his brothers, that is to say her brothers, his sons, who yaushin the estate, are going to continue to support her until she gets married. So now, if she's basani zonis menachem, so now when she's in that situation, her brothers have yaushin the estate, she is now being supported by them through this takonis chachamim. So now, maisia deha lami. So now, if she earns money, who does it go to? Do we say v'mkoim of kaini? Do we say that the brothers now stand in the place of the father? Ma hosam maisiyah de'al av hachanami maisiyah de'al achin? Do we say that just as when the father was alive, her earnings would go to her father, so now they go to her brothers because they take over for the father? Oiduma loidami la'av, or maybe it's not really the same as the father. Hosam midyidei mitzina, because after all, there she's being supported from his own property, because he has to support his daughter. Here, when you think about it, it's not actually she's not really being supported because the reason why she's being supported by them is because it's a tnai of the ksuba. So therefore, it's not really, it can't really be attributed to them. Yes, of course, in practice, they're the ones who are giving her the money, who are giving her the food, but it's not really because it is a responsibility on them, but that responsibility came as a result of the tnaik suba, rather than as something where she's their daughter and therefore they're supporting her. So that's the question then. So what happens to the maisiyah deha? In other words, we can look at it essentially as where does the chiyuv come from, and what level of chiyuv is it? Amalei, sort of Sheshes answers Tinisua. Well, we have a Mishnah later on in our Masechta that bears on this. It says Almana Nizonis Minichsi Yisaimim. It says that so now also the Almana. So the person passed away, his sons inherited his property, but his Almana, it continues to be supported from the property of the Yisaimim, similar to the daughter. Umaisia Deha Shalahan, and in fact, Umaisia Deha would go to them because now they're taking over for the father. Doesn't matter for that purpose, by the way, whether the almana is their own mother or whether their father had more than one wife, and we're talking about that. Therefore, they're not her children. Either way, the point is we're saying that she's being supported by them. It's also one of the tnoik suva, and they're also entitled to their maisiyah deha. So, on the face of it, the same should be with the daughter, says Rav Sheshes. But the Gemara says, me dummy. How do you compare that? There's a big difference. When it comes to his almana, he doesn't necessarily care that she should be able to earn some money for herself. Now you have those, so you have this panasasa, there's the money that she's being given to, that she's being given to sustain her. In the case of the daughter, by the way, that also includes that she's given a certain percentage of the nechassim when she gets married to be able to use for, to be able to use for dowry and wedding expenses and whatever. But when it comes to his widow, he wants her to be supported. He doesn't want her to have to be begging on the streets, but he doesn't care about harvacha, that she should be able to earn some money and be self-supporting. As far as he's concerned, if his almana continues to be supported by his Gershim throughout their life, that's fine with him. On the other hand, you could say with the daughter, he would like her to be able to earn some money for herself. That way, so she can be self-supporting. She can use it to, meanwhile, she'll have her parnasa, she'll have money that she's being given in order to sustain her on an ongoing basis. And Agoy Sabach also adds that some of it will be used for her nedunia eventually, some of it will be used for her dowry, but he'd also like that this way she brings a little more assets in when she gets married. With his almana, he doesn't care about that. His almana is not necessarily gonna get remarried, and even if she does, it's not really his concern that she should. So therefore, you can say that when it comes to his almana, he didn't particularly care to make arrangements that she should be able to keep her Maisi Adeha. On the other hand, his daughter, maybe he does. Well, the question is, remember the Bita Yadifalei Ma'amanasei. So are you telling me then, it comes out from what you just said, that his daughter that he wants more to arrange something good for his daughter more than his almana? I'll show you the other way around. I'll show you an example where we see where the almana is treated with more, where the almana has more rights than the daughter. Namely, like this. The Mishnah tells us in Bava Basra that when a person dies, again, of course, you know, his sons yarshin the property, and they're saying that they have to support their sisters until the sisters get married. And then in addition, they also have to support the widow. Now what happens, the Mishnah describes over there, what if you only have nechasim mu'atim? What if you only have a small amount of estate? So it's not going to be enough to support the daughter as well as for the sons to yarshin. So then we say actually that the daughter's claim to that money for their sustenance so they get married takes precedence over the boy's yarshin. So what winds up happening is that small amount of nechassim is given to the daughters for them to support themselves, and the sons, if there's nothing left for them to inherit, then fine, they'll have to go begging by the doors in order to collect money for themselves. Now, in a similar vein, you also have the question, what happens if you have not only the daughter, but you also have the almana? So you have the same issue then. What are we doing as far as taking care of the almana, and what are we doing as far as taking care of the daughters? So va'amar of Abba Amar of Yesi, also almana etzel abas kebas etzel achin v'nechosim muatim. When it comes to this nechosim muatim, when it comes to you don't have enough of an estate, and Rashi brings from the Gemara in Baba Basra that it means where there's not enough for all of them to live off of for 12 months, then the almana relative to the daughter has the same position as the daughter relative to the brothers. Meaning, when it comes to the daughter versus the brother, versus her brothers, what's going to happen if there's nechasim muatim? She has first dibs on the money, so she gets as much of it as is available. And the sons, if there's nothing left for them to inherit, or if there's not 12 months worth of parnasa for them to inherit, then they can go begging by the doors in order to collect money for themselves to live off of. So her claim to that money takes precedence over theirs. So Rav Abba says, Af almana etzel abbas, almana nizonis v'abbas tishal apsachim. The same thing is true as far as the almana versus the daughter, that the almana, in other words, she has first precedence. That she has first precedence on that money, and if that means there's not enough left for the daughters, okay, well then the daughters will have to go and beg for money or something, go collect tzedakah because the almana has first rights to be supported by that money. So Tosfos discusses that we're not talking about where the daughter actually inherits. We're not talking about where there were no sons and therefore the daughter is inheriting. That's different. What we're talking about over here is where you have, there's an almana as well as sons, as well as daughters. So the daughter should have had precedence on that money over her brothers, again, until she becomes a begetter, so until she gets married. And now, like this, the almana overrides that. So we see that the almana has precedence over the daughter. On the face of it, that's because we evaluate that a person would rather have that his almana should be supported in style rather than that his daughters should. So what are you telling me before that he's looking out more for his daughters, and therefore you want to say that when it comes to the almana, when she's being supported by the heirs, then the maiseyadeh goes to them. And when he's saying by the daughter, on the other hand, you want her to be able to earn more money, based on what we just said, it comes out the other way around. And the answer is, there's a difference. La'inyan zilusa, when it comes to degradation, the degradation of having to go out and collect tzedakah, almanoseh adifalei. Then he would prefer that his almana doesn't have to suffer that, maybe because it reflects back badly on him, whatever it is. The point is, that if he would rather avoid, if at all possible, that his almana should have to go collecting stuff. So her claim on that money to support herself takes precedence over the daughter. La'inyan harvacha, but when it comes to earning an independent income to be able to eventually use it when she gets married, bitei adifalei, then his daughter is more preferable to him than his almana. Again, because it's normal his daughter is going to get married. His almana may not get married at all, or if she does, he doesn't really care about it one way or the other. So therefore, we could still say that he would prefer that the daughter be able to keep her earnings and be able to use them to bring into her marriage. Okay. Continues the Gemara, Masiv Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef says, now we have a contradiction to sort of Sheshis is saying so far that she doesn't keep her Maisi Adel, it goes to her brothers. So now, our Mishnah says, Maisi Adel Mitziyasa, her earnings and anything that she finds, Afa Pishalei Gov, so we said, even though she didn't collect it when the father was alive, Nes Ha'av Harein Shalachin, so if the father dies and the money hadn't been collected yet, then it goes to the brothers, because we said it's Mamun and it gets Yarshin like everything else of his. So Taima Debachaya Ha'av. The implication seems to be that we're saying because she earned the money when her father was alive, then therefore her brothers end up getting it. Implying, but if she earned the money after her father died, the implication is she keeps it for herself. My love, the Nizonis. On the face of it, we have to be talking about where she's being supported by her brothers. And even so, we're saying that she gets to keep it. That would contradict Rav Sheshis. And the answer is light, not necessarily B'she'en and Nizonis. The implication of the Mishnah could be where she's not being supported by them. For example, Rashi says there were no Nechasim for her to be supported at all. So the Gemara says Ibishain and his onus, my memra. Well, if she's not being, it could be that Rashi doesn't even mean that there's no nechasim at all. He could mean that there's nechasim muatim. We were saying that the daughter's claim on it overrides the son's, and therefore the daughter winds up taking possession of all of those nechasim, and the sons don't. So therefore, they're not supporting her on an ongoing basis, and therefore we'd say maybe only in that case then her maisi adeh doesn't go to them. So the Gemara says, Ibishain and his own is my memra. If she's not being supported by the brothers, then what's the chiddush? Of course her earnings wouldn't go to them. After all, we have a discussion elsewhere in Shas. Can a master say to his Eved Kanani that I'm not obligated to support you? You have to work for me, but I'm not obligated to support you. Where the idea being that a point how would the Eved live? So he'd go collecting tzedakah for himself. Given that, you know, the same way as you have a mitzvah to help a fellow yid and give him tzedakah, the same way an Eved Kanani is considered a quasi yid, after all, he is chayiv in some mitzvahs, and people would give him tzedakah, and therefore, according to that opinion, the master has the ability to say that to the Eved, say to the Eved that even though you're my slave and you have to work for me, I'm not obligated to support you. You go collect tzedakah for yourself. it's not a very smart thing to do, and the Eved is soon going to get fed up with it and run away, but that's not our problem. That's not Beiskin's problem, according to that opinion. Anyway, so even according to that opinion, that the master can say that, that only applies to an Eved Kanani, where after all, the Torah doesn't use the word imach, that he has to be with you, meaning on an equal level to you, so therefore you can say that you're able to do such a thing. But not even by an Eved Ivri, because by an Eved Ivri, it said, uses the word imach, that he's with you, meaning that you have to treat him to a certain extent as an equal of yours, so you wouldn't have the right to say to an Eved Ivri, I'm not supporting you, go collect tzedakah for yourself, because that violates imach. How much more so his daughter, who's not an Eved or a Shifcha at all, why is there even a Havam in the thing? That the daughter should have to give her Maisi Adair to her brothers. Nela, if they're supporting her, okay, so it's kind of a quid pro quo. You're supporting her, therefore she's giving you your Maisi Adair. But if they're not even supporting her because there weren't Nechasim or there weren't enough Nechasim, of course she's not giving them her Maisi Adair. So there's no question then that if our Mishnah is making a point of implying that her Maisi Adair don't go to the brothers, what the Maisi Adair, the earnings that she earned after her father passed away, shouldn't it have to be talking about where they are supporting her and was still saying, nevertheless, she's not required to give it to them, and that would contradict Rav Sheshis? And the answer is, Amar Rav Ba'ula, Len Yitzchukha El Ha'adof. Okay, so Rav Ba'ula says, you could be talking about where there's extra. You could say, the Mishnah is still implying to us that whatever she earns after the Misa Sa'av go to herself. We are talking about where Eina Nizonis, we are talking about where she's not even being supported by her brothers. But what we're saying is, let's say that, we are talking about where she's being supported by her brothers, but let's say that she makes extra. Let's say the amount that it costs to feed her and then to feed her and provide for her necessities per week is, let's say, is $100. She's making $150. So maybe then the Mishnah is implying that if she earns more than the amount that they're paying her for Mizonis, then we're saying she gets to keep that. So that doesn't necessarily show. Maybe in fact she should have to be compensating them as much as possible for what they're giving her, and Maisi Adeha would go to her brothers. But anything extra she'd be able to keep. So Amar Rava. So Rava says you have to consider when Rabbi Yosef brought up the question. Gavra Rava Rabbi Yosef lo yada de ikah hadafa. So if that's the answer, that there's a difference between the basic amount, between the amount that what it is like this. Sorry, we're talking about where she's not being supported by the brothers. So then we're saying that she's not being supported by them. Maybe nevertheless, we would still say that the amount that's equal to, so she earns enough to be able to support herself, plus she's earning some extra. So maybe we would be saying that that extra needs to go to them. So didn't Rabbi Yosef realize that there could be such a thing? Gavra Rabbi Rabbi Yosef lo yada de ikah hadafa. Didn't he realize that there could be such a thing where she's earning extra of a kamosif tziyuta, that he's asking the question from our Mishnah? Why is Rabbi Yosef even bothering to bring up the question from the Mishnah, where the Mishnah seems to be implying that she gets to keep her own Maisi Adeha if she earned it after the father died, and saying that contradicts Rav Sheshis and says, that they should get her Maisi Adeha? Didn't Rabbi Yosef realize that there could be a big difference between the basic amount that would be equal to Mizonis versus Hadafa? So that's not a valid answer. Ela Amar Rava, Rabbi Yosef Masnisin Gufa Kachalei. So Rava says no. The reason why Rabbi Yosef brought up the question in the first place is because he was bothered by the wording of the Mishnah. Now, the wording of the Mishnah is implying it's not a matter of hadafa or not. We have to look more carefully. The Mishnah had said, "Dikatani Maisi Adeha Mitziyasa Afapi Shalei Gavsa." We said her earnings as well as anything she finds, even if she didn't collect it yet. So we said that that goes. So even though she hadn't collected it yet, we say it goes to the father, and eventually from there, the son's yashin it. because it's like any other mother. You have to ask, Maisiya Deh, fine, there's collecting, but Mitsiyos, the Miman Gavya. When you talk about Mitsiya, there's no collecting. You found it. You found it. There's no collecting. So why is it using the expression Gavsa? Ela Lab Hafi Kama. Evidently then, Rabbi Yosef realized the Mishnah must be telling us Maisiya Deh Kimitsiyasa. What the Mishnah is telling us is that her Maisiya Deh have the same status as her Mitsiya. Ma Mitsiyos, Machaya, Av La'av, La'acha Mises, Av La'atma. If she finds something while her father is alive, then it belongs to the father. But if she finds it after her father dies, then it goes to her. And that for sure, Rashi says, we know that because after all, even when her father is alive, only if she's being supported by him, only if she's actually eating from his table, being supported by him, only then. So we say that Mishum Eva, the Chachamim didn't want that there should be bad feelings between them. The father was going to think, look, I'm supporting my daughter, and now she found such a Metzia, and I don't even get anything of it. So therefore, that's going to create bad feelings between him and her, and therefore the Chachamim said that he should get her Metzia. If he's not supporting her, even though he's alive, and otherwise he has Rishus over her Minatarda, but then he doesn't get her Metzia. So even by the father, it's only if he's supporting her. And la'acha misas ha'av la'atzma, after the father dies, whether he was supporting her or not, she gets to keep it herself. And again, that would apply even if she's being supported by the brothers, because they're not doing it out of the goodness to their hearts. They're doing it because they're required to by the tznoik sova. Well, so therefore the Mishnah would be implying by mentioning ma'isya den tziyasa would be the same thing. So the implication would be that Maisiya Deh would be the same thing. As long as the father is alive, then he gets her Maisiya Deh. After he passes away, then it should go, anything that she earns after that should go to her. So not like Rav Sheshis, who had said that Maisiya Deh would go to the brothers. No, we would say like the other side of it, that the fact is they're not supporting her out of the goodness of their hearts, but rather because they're required to by the Tanoik Suba. So therefore, that's not reason enough for them to be entitled to Maisiya Deh. So that was what. So it wasn't just that Rabbi Yosef pointed out the Mishnah, and then we could say that after all, there's a difference between the lesser amount that she earns, and then if there's hadafa, if she earns more than she needs, more than she needs to support herself, where then you could argue maybe the extra goes to the brothers. No, we're talking about that the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah is implying that the brothers never get from Maisiya Deh anything that she earned after the father passes away. That was what Rav Yosef wanted by bringing the Mishnah. That's how he wanted to contradict Rav Sheshis. So the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, in fact, it was said, Shmami no, so that proves it. Itmar Nami, Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Basin is Ernest Fana Achen, Maisiya Deh La'atma, when the girl is being supported by her brothers, then she gets to keep her Maisiya Deh. And the Gemara says, Omer Rav Kahana, my timer. Now, why is that? After all, we said that the Mishnah is implying it, but where does the Mishnah itself get it from? Why don't we say, like, the first possibility that the sons take over from the for the father, and just like he was entitled to Maisiya Deh, so are they. And the reason is, because the Pasuk says, V'isnachaltem oisem levnechem acharesem. The person says about, the Pasuk says about an Eved Kanani, you should bequeath them, Avadim Kananim, to your sons after you. And the word oisam means oisam levnechem. You bequeath an Eved Kanani to your sons, v'loi b'nei seifam levnechem. You're not bequeathing your daughters to your sons. Magid she'ein adam morish chus biter levnoi. That means that when a person has certain rights over his daughter, in this case, we're talking about Maisiya Deh, where he's entitled to her Maisiya Deh. As long as he's alive, he doesn't bequeath that to her sons that they should take over after him. So even if they're supporting her, nevertheless, she's not required to give them her Maisiya Deh. But Maski for Rabba, but Rabba says, how do you know that's what we're talking about? Maybe it's not talking about Maisiya Deh. The aim of a pituri habas knosis for chabolas hakosim medaber. Maybe in fact the pasuk is not talking about her Maisiya Deh, where after all the whole takana of Maisiya Deh is really only dirabanan. Maybe we're talking about things like, for example, if at that point after her father passed away, if somebody had seduced the daughter, or if there was other kinds of knas or other kinds of injuries, all of those are unusual things first of all, those are unusual things. So you could say that maybe then a one-off thing like that, Toto will allow her to keep for herself, as opposed to Maisie Adeha, which is a normal ongoing thing. Second of all, Rashi adds also that the fact is the brothers, after all, are spending money on her. They are supporting her from the estate, so they're spending money on her. Maybe for that reason, they should be entitled at least to Maisie Adeha, which is a regular ongoing thing. Fine, to make them entitled to Zelus to Chavolos and Knossos or whatever, maybe not, but at least they should be entitled to her regular earnings. And in fact, the Gemara says, in fact, Reb Chanina teaches a braisa that says just that the Pasuk is talking about only those kinds of things. Now, of course, we don't have to explain the braisa that way, which is why we said that so Reb Yosef can still stick to his opinion that says that they don't get her Maisie Adeha, but we are saying there is another way of learning the braisa, that it is talking about only things like pituri and other knas and whatever. But on the other hand, her Maisie Adeha would go to the brothers. Okay, so the Gemara asks if you're going to tell me that it's only chavolos tzara degufanimu. When it comes to if somebody injured her and then he's paying the various payments that a mazik has to pay, that is tzar that applied to her own body. Now we learned the other day that when it comes to an anusa, the father gets the money for the tzar, but really actually it actually brings from you were asking the other day actually that why should he be entitled to it if it's something that happened to her. Really actually it actually brings from a braisa in Bava Basra, in Bava Kama, that says that actually if there that even though he is in principle entitled to that money, really what he should do, he should make a segula for them. He should use that money for something which will eventually benefit them when they get older. So why are we saying over here that instead it becomes part of the estate, and you're saying that why are you saying over here that the father should have full rights to it at all? Such that the pasuk needs to be telling us that he doesn't bequeath it to his sons. And the answer is Amr Yosef Achanina Shapotza B'Chanech, because we're talking about where the injury happened in her face. Well, so now that kind of thing. It's not just that she suffered an injury. That also actually reduces her value in the sense that now she has a scar on her face. Fewer people are going to be wanting to marry her. So that kind of thing. Though, if the father was alive, then he would get it. After all, the father is even allowed to sell her as an Oma Hevriya, so therefore anything that reduces her value would end up going to the father. And therefore we're saying, but the sons don't inherit it because he's not bequeathing the schus that he has in his daughter to his sons. But when we're talking about injuries that don't actually affect her, looks, then you're right. Then the father wouldn't really have reshus over them anyway. He'd be more like a trustee over that money on her behalf. So Tosfos points out that we're not just talking about that. Any other kind of injury, the key factor is going to be, does the injury prevent her from doing work? Does it hamper her ability to earn money? If in fact it does, then it would be considered, then it would factor in to Maisie Adeha. But if it doesn't, then it would belong to her, and at most her father is a trustee over it, and it certainly doesn't get bequeathed to the children. Okay. Further on this topic, Omer of Zera, Omer of Masna, Omer Rav, Va'amriva, Omer Rabbi Zera, Omer of Masna, Omer Rav, two different versions. Was it Rav Zera or Rabbi Zera, who says in the name of the Masna, in turn in the name of Rav? It's the same person. Rashi points out, we know that famously Rav Zera was born and grew up in Babel, and then eventually he moved to Eretz Yisrael. When a person moved, when it, only in Eretz Yisrael did they have, in those days, did they have the smicha, ish mikyish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which entitles a person to be called the Rebbe. So when he went to Eretz Yisrael, then he received that smicha and was called Rebbe. So now the two different versions over here in the Gemara are arguing whether he said this when he was still in Babel and still had the title Rav, or whether he said it after he moved to Eretz Yisrael and earned the title Rebbe. Anyway, so he says, When the daughter is being supported by her brothers, then her Maisie Adeha goes to her herself, like Rav Yosef had said, not like Rav Sheshet had said. And also not like Rav Chanina had said. The dichtiv v'isnachaltem oisam with nechem acharechem, because the pasuk that we quoted before that says you should bequeath them the avodim knanim to your sons after you, implying oisam levnechem, b'lo b'nei seichem levnechem, you bequeath your avodim knanim to your sons after you, not your daughters to your sons. Magen chain on a mersh hospiter levnoi. From here we see that a person does not bequeath the rights that he has over his daughters to his sons. So therefore, even though he's entitled to a maisia deha when he's alive, but after he passes away, any maisia deha that she earns after that, she gets to keep herself. So now we said that Reb Zera had said it in the name, ultimately going back to Rav. So the Gemara says, "Omalei avimi bat papi shokud omra." So Ravimi Bat Papi tells Rav Zera, you should know that Shokud says this. So the Gemara asks Shokud Manu Shmuel. Who is Shokud? He's called Shmuel. The word Shokud literally means that he's diligent, that he's very careful. So Rashi explains, Shmuel, we know the halacha is like him in Dini Mominus, and he was very careful when he said something in Dini Mominus, that it should be a little bit of hilcha, said that it should be according to the halacha. Here we're talking about a matter of Dini Mominus. So Avimi Bat Papi says, you should know that Shokud, Shmuel, who is particularly careful to make sure that he gets everything right in Dini Mominus, is the one who said this. There was an interesting explanation from the Chavis Yor, actually, who says that the word Shokud actually can be related to a couple of other things as well. One thing is we find by the Menorah that the cups and flowers and whatever of it were embossed with Mishukodim, with a pattern of almonds. So therefore, Mishukodim can also mean, so therefore, Shokud can also mean, by transference, can mean a person who has a good ability to draw pictures visually in his mind, which Shmuel did. He was an expert astronomer, so he, as we find in other places in Shas, so he had that ability. In addition, it also means that he's very quick on the draw. The word shoked also means an almond, which blossoms and produces fruit very quickly. So it also means that he was very quick on the draw to explain the halacha. Anyway, so shokud manu Shmuel. So who is shokud? Is Shmuel? What do you mean? Ha Rav Amra. What do you mean? We just said that Rav said it. So how can Avimi Bat Papi say that Shmuel said it? And the answer is Ema Af Shokud Amra. You're right. Avimi Bat Papi wants us to know that not only Rav said it, Shmuel said it as well. Which again strengthens that is the final halacha, since the halacha would be like Shmuel and Dini Mominus. So the Gemara says, the Gemara finishes off, So Ma'abar Amema says to Rav Ashi, you should know, the Chachamim and Nahadah say that the halacha is after all like Rav Sheshes, and therefore that the daughter's Maisya Deh would in fact go to her brothers, even what she earned after the father passed away. But for Rav Ashi Yom Rav, Rav Ashi himself says the Nahadoi may say that, but the halacha is in fact like Rav, that no, she gets to keep it. The Hilchsa Kavasei the Rav, and the halacha ultimately is like Rav, that she's allowed to keep it, and not like Rav Sheshes that says that it would go to her brothers. Mishnah says, Hama'aris, since we talked about, so the first Mishnah, the previous Mishnah was talking about the father's rights to the knas and the boshes and pugam and so forth that are paid as a result of the onus or pitui of the daughter. So now our Mishnah is going to talk about more generally what are the father's rights to the kedushin money, to the kedushin money and the ksuba money of his daughter. So the Mishnah says, Hama'aris is bitui, if a father is ma'aris his daughter, so he gives her away in kedushin, where he's entitled, as long as she's a katana or naira, the money for kedushin goes to him, to the father. So the girsha, and then her chosin divorced her, irsav nis'armala, or if he was ma'aris her and then she was widowed, either way, ksubasa shaloi, the ksuba of the daughter belongs to the father. She's collecting a ksuba from her arusa. Now later on in the sechta, we're going to talk about that there's not necessarily, we're going to talk about it here in the Gemara, talking about the Gemara on this Mishnah, about the chlal, since when is the ksuba paid out? Mina Erosin usually only have a ksuba, only takes effect after Nisuin, so we'll discuss that point. But anyway, here we're talking about where the ksuba is being paid out after Erosin, since she's a ktana or a naira, then it's like any other earnings of hers, and therefore it goes to her father. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, he see of a gersha, he see of an isarimala. If then, on the other hand, if he married her off, there was not just erusin but full nisuin, and then her husband divorced her, or he married her off and then she was widowed, ksubasa shalah, then her ksuba belongs to her, because once the father married her off, then she's out of her rishus. Then she's out of his rishus. We don't say, Rashi explains, we don't say since the ksuba was written when the father was, when she was still in the rishus of the father, then therefore it should belong to the father. The point is, no, we go according to when the ksuba is actually up for collection, when she's divorced or when she's widowed, and by that point she's already out of her father's rishus. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, Harishona shall have, the first one, meaning from her first marriage, is going to go to the father, as we'll see in the Gemara. Amr Eloi, the Chacham answered, Rabbi Yehuda, no, as soon as the father marries her off, then her father has no more reshus over her, so there's no reason that you should get even the first ksuba. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is assuming that when the Mishnah said he sees the gersha, we're not just talking about, we don't mean that there's separate cases. He married her off and then she was divorced, or he married her off and then she was widowed. It can actually mean one and then the other. So time of the see of a gerusha, he see of an asamala. The reason why the Mishnah is mentioning that he married her off and then she was divorced, and he married her off and then she was widowed, meaning it could even be one after the other, and then we have, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the second ksuba already belongs to her. He just disagrees and says the first ksuba belongs to her father. But the point is, Abba Misamala Tre Zimni, but the implication of the Mishnah seems to be that if she had been widowed twice, Tula Chazil in Suvi, then she can't get married again, because then already we have what we learned about in Yuvamas, that she's a Katlonis, she has a Chazaka, that her husband's died. So therefore the Tana specifically mentioned Si of a Gersha, he see of an Isamala, rather than saying, for example, we see of an Isamala, he see of an Isamala, where she was widowed twice, because the Tana doesn't want to mention such a case. So you would rather not mention the case of a Katlonis. The Agav Urchit Hasasim on Tana Kerebi, which means that, by the way, the Tana is telling us a Stam Mishnah like Rebbe, Dama B'Tre Zimni, have a Chazaka, who says two times is enough for a Chazaka, where we learned in Yuvamas that when it comes to this and when it comes to several other areas in Halacha, we have the question of Chazaka, we had a Machlokas Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel, whether it takes two or three times to make a Chazaka, Rebbe had said two times, and we see that here the Stam Mishnah is telling us, like Rebbe, that in fact two times is enough to make her a katlonis, and then she shouldn't be remarrying. We did discuss there that there are various cases where we don't apply the rule of katlonis, among other things, the post can talk about if, let's say, her husband died in freak accidents or whatever. But the point is, our Mishnah didn't want to get into that level of detail, but it didn't want to mention that she was widowed twice in order not to imply that she becomes a katlonis. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishon Shel Av, so Rabbi Yehuda says in this case, where she went through more than one marriage, he says the first ksuba belongs to the father when she was married as a Tana or a Naira, and only the second ksuba and onward belongs to her. So my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that? Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, the Amit Havai, so both Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef say, Hoel Mashas Erisin, Zachar Ben Av. Because already at the time of the Erisin, of the first husband, already he becomes obligated to pay her the ksuba. So at that point, belongs to the father, just like anything else that she would earn during that time in her life. By the time she marries the first one, then his reshus over her is gone. So therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that the second ksuba belongs to her. But the Gemara says, Mosiv Rava. Rava says, I have a contradiction. A braisa spells it out in more detail and says that Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishon Shalav, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the first ksuba belongs to the father, Umoide Rabbi Yehuda b'ma'aris bitei kshitana, but Rabbi Yehuda does agree that if the erusin took place when she was a tana, ubogura, and then she became a begeris, v'achatach misis, and then she got married, she'en lo v'yo reshuspa, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in that case, once she became a begeris, the father loses her reshus over, his reshus over her. Now, based on what you're saying, if it's a matter of that at the time of the Erusin, the father was already Zoycha in the money, then why? Shouldn't we say the same thing? At the time of the Eresin, she was still a Ktana or a Naira. Therefore, at that point, the father should be Zochenet. The fact that she became a Begeres later on should be neither here nor there. Why is Rabbi Horda agreeing that in that case, the money of the Tsuba belongs to her? But most things, you're right. Ela I itma hochi itma. Rather, if it was said, then it was said like this. We have to present the statement of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef differently. Rabbi of Rabbi Yosef, the Amit Abayu, hol v'shusay nichtovin. The reason is because the ksuba is written when she was in his reshus. So now, if she becomes a begeris before the nisa, now, the ksuba is written in preparation, the ksuba is written in preparation for the nisuin. So if the ksuba is written when it is written and if the nisuin are taking place before she becomes a begeris, then yeah, Rabbi Horda is saying that the money belongs to him. But if the kiddushin took place before when she was a ktana, but the nisuin took place by the, only after she was a begeris, well then the ksuba is in connection with the nisuin. So then that's why Rabbi Horda is saying that he agrees that the money is going to go to her. And Rashi points out, by the way, the word nichtavin, that if they are written in the plural, what's the they? And so Rashi says, because you have different amounts of ksuba, as we learned in the first parak. Sometimes you have 100 if she's a non-basula, and 200 if she is. So therefore we're using the word nichtavim in plural, referring to those different amounts. But the point is, Rabbi Horda is not distinguishing between when the erusin took place. It took place, he's distinguishing when the nisuin took place. If the nisuin took place when she's out of his reshus, then at that point, the ksuba, which goes along with that, is already coming into effect when she's out of his reshus. Therefore, the money is going to go to her. Only if the nisuin took place when she's still a ktana or a naira would he say that the money goes to her. Okay, so now the question is, umnigba me'emas gapya. So at what point is the money collectible? So now we have the ksuba is being written, so what happens though, after all, it's based on the erusin. So do we say that the shibud of the ksuba begins from the time of the erusin? So even though it wasn't actually written until closer to the nisuin, which usually in those times was a year apart, the shibud would go retroactive to the erusin, and therefore it would mean when the ksuba is written, if later on, we know, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, that the husband's nechosim are meshubad to that ksuba, and that means even if he sells some of them, if he sells some of his real estate, then the wife has the ability to take it away from the buyers, just as would be the case with any Baal Choy. Well, would we say that she has the ability to do that retroactive to the Erusin, meaning that if he sold property any time between the Erusin and the writing of the Ksuba, she'd be entitled to take that? Or do we say that no, only when the Ksuba is actually written, only then it becomes a milv of the shtar. You can't take away property to collect a debt. You can't take away property from the chosin mishabodim, from property that was sold to other people without a shtar. That's how Rashi learned the question. Tosfos has some problems with that explanation. And so Tosfos says that no, the question is not in general about when a woman gets married, how far back the shibud goes. We're talking specifically in this case where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that there was the erusin, then she became a begeris, then she got married. So now, so what do we say? Do we say that when the ksuba was written, then at that point we were kind of moichel on the shibud, and therefore it should begin only then? Or maybe we would say that if the ksuba was written when she's no longer in the father's reshus, so the question would be in this particular case that we're dealing with here in the Gemara, Then when does the shibud begin? Omer Avuna mona masayim in the erusin v'toisvus min anisurin. So Rav Huna says the basic amount of the ksuba, the 100 or the 200 zuz, that already takes effect from the erusin. V'toisvus min anisurin, but the additional amount where he might write extra in the ksuba that he's going to pay her more, that begins only at the time of the nisurin. But Rav Asi yom echad zev echad zem in anisurin. Rav Asi says both of them only kick in when the nisuin takes place. So Rashi uses the expression that even though in principle there would be a shibud going back to the time of the Erusin, she is in effect moichel on that and is willing. The shtar is being written now with a date. Suba is being written now with a date, and she's willing to have the shibud begin only at that point and not to be retroactive to the time of the kiddushin. So here you have actually the Marshal and Marshal and Marshal discussed between themselves a couple of different angles on what that means exactly when they say that she's moichel, on the original shibud. So the Marshal explains and what we're talking about, if she had remained in Arusa, then yeah, if she had remained in Arusa, then the shibud would still be in effect. The question is, once she gets married, do we say that retroactively she's being moichel on the original shibud? That's how the Marashah learns, and the Marashah discusses and says that it's not really that. It means that at the time of the erusin, she's willing in advance to say that I'm not gonna start imposing my shibud right now. As of now, I'm willing to say that it'll start only when we write the ksuba and I get married. So Rav Huna is saying that there's a difference between the basic mona and masayin versus the tosfos, and Rav Asi is saying there's no difference. Either way, it only begins at the time of the nisuin. So the Gemara says, "Umi Amar Rav Huna Hachi." Did Rav Huna really say that? That some of it already begins from the time of the erusin. But itmar, we have a discussion. See all of shtei ksubas. What if a woman takes out two ksubas she has in her possession, two different ksubas that have different amounts? Achas shemasayim v'achas shol shloish meis. One says 200 zuz and the other one says 300. But Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says both the ligbus masayim. If she wants to collect the one that has the smaller amount, so now in other words, one kind of overrides the other. So one overrides the other. We don't say it's a total of 500, but she might have an advantage with the smaller one, namely if it is dated earlier, and therefore she has more of a right to collect property that he might have sold in between. So both of Ligvus Mosayim, if she wants to collect the 200, Goivam is Manrishin, then she can collect from the date of the earlier shtar. Shlosh Meis, Goivam is Mancheni, but if she wants to collect from the 300, then she can only collect from property that was sold after the time of the second shtar. Now, the Imisa, if you're going to tell me, Rav Huna, that the Mosayim, which is the basic amount of the Ksuba for a Besula, takes effect already from the Erusin, Tigme Mosayim was Mizman Rishon, Omei Mizman Sheni. Then why are we saying that if she wants the 300, she can only get the whole 300 from Mizman Sheni? On the face of it, 200 should be from Mizman Rishon, because that should already take effect at the time of the Erusin, and the other 100, fine, would take place only later. So my answer is Bali Taimei. And according to your logic, did you even ask him the question? Tigbi Chamesh Meis, then you should say maybe she should be entitled to 500. Kulam, the whole 500. Masayim is Manushin, Shlasmeim is Mansheni. Maybe you would say that there are in fact two ksubas, and he's saying that 200 were to take effect at the time of the Erusin and another 300 later. Ela Chamesh Meis, my time of Legavia. Obviously, the answer is that why doesn't she collect 500? Kivin de Lekosav, what Svisi, what is Sivas Loch? Since he doesn't write the words that I voluntarily added to you, Tlas Mea Amosayim, then we don't say that the 300 is in addition to the 200. It means that he's overriding it. Since he's not saying I voluntarily added another 300 to the 200, then evidently he's telling her, Im is man rishin gudias, if you want to collect from the earlier time, and that way you'll be entitled to take nechassim that I sold between the erusin and the nisuin. Gavi masayim, then you can collect 200. Even as mancheni gvias, if you're willing to only collect from property that I sold after the later date, gavi tlasmeya, then you're entitled to 300. Hakanami. So now applying that to our case over here, where we brought this in to deal with Rav Huna's opinion, Hainu Taima Delay Gavya, the reason why she doesn't collect from the beginning is Midaloy Kosovoy Sifas Lahmeya Amosayim, since he's saying 300, he's not saying that there's 200 and I voluntarily added another 100, Ahuli Achilta the Shibud Kama, then we can say that she was moichel on the original Shibud, and therefore that Rav Huna would say that the Tosfos takes place only at the time of the Nisuin. The original 200 fine can take place from the Erusin, and she's not moichel on that, but the extra would only take place after the Nisuin. And we'll continue with discussing that tomorrow, Master Shem.